Good evening. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and we are working with the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. This is our 51st class. How many weeks are in a year nowadays?
52.
52?
Getting close.
Wow. So we've spent almost a year. We're slow readers, okay? We're slow readers, and we're working our way through it. And because we're on, what chamber are we on now? The 40th chamber.
40 or 41, I believe.
We're on 40. And we have just begun to fight, as they say. So this has been, a remarkable experiment over this last year. And I've been fortunate enough to be joined by wonderful colleagues here in front of the camera, Pat and Ivan, and remarkable colleagues that are not in front of the camera but are physically here, which is Tamara and Dan, and then our ever-present support, which is spectacular in my mind, which is Marvette. And others who have joined us from time to time. Molly's not here tonight, but she is an integral part of it for me every time. And then to expand that is the community of the seekers that are online right now as part of this. And on the phone tonight, we happen to have George and Harry, who are, these are highly experienced individuals who have spent their entire life studying the material of transformation, and have spent, each of them have spent ungodly amounts of hours just focus.
And godly. Godly hours and ungodly.
I happen to know George has spent ungodly hours, but I don't know about her. He was a monk for a while, so. And then online, we have a number of people that come, some of them who are new and some of them who are been coming for a long time. This creates community. You weren't here last week.
I wasn't sitting physically in the chamber with you. I was definitely here.
I missed you last week.
You just missed my form sitting next to you. What was
I
it about?
I still missed
what was
you.
It, what was it about
and I was
last
just,
week? I'm in I was sure I was here. Nice shirt.
And in the 39th chamber, which
yes.
was last week, and we went over it,
yes.
and I was wondering if you could read the center section of that particular chamber, because that's what is inspiring me today.
I take refuge in the clear light. I take refuge in the beloved. I take refuge in the way of the teaching. I take refuge in the company of the brotherhood of spiritual souls.
And I point tonight to the Sangha, and I point again because it's important for me to that we acknowledge the fact that we are part of that group invocation. Yes, we know that we're part of that invocation. We know we're part of that group, and we know it intellectually, and we can derive it. But what I'm saying is take note of the fact that you are part of an actual body, okay? And I'll try not to go off into this too much, but when we invoke the work we're trying to do and we invoke it in a certain way, the individuals that are present begin to have enough form that in that form they can allow a presence to come mm-hmm. that isn't available, isn't possible when we work individually. Even though everybody here works very hard individually. And Dan, I would like you to read just some of the names, if you can, of who's here tonight on the phone. Read it on the, so it goes on the machine.
Well, tonight we have Kanjo and Silverdale, Path World, Shelley Boyce, Melissa Lorca, Doc Goff, and Hawk Lady.
So these are Path World, as I said, 5 or 6 years ago, is the one that basically was the catalyst to start these Wednesday night invasions into the world, really, because we're coming from not in the world into the world in order to make a mark. And
could you have my tea while you're here?
Sure.
You are so kind, dear one.
And there are other people, thank you, that haven't signed in. But so that's the tool that we're working with. So if you have a sense of acknowledgement that you are part of that larger body, that larger invocational body, you start to feel stuff, and you start to feel a particular type of obligation, because at that moment, we can do something.
And that is something I want to add a little piece to. You use the word form, and the word formulation is sometimes seen only in its meaning of a coherence or an understanding or a cognition. But if you think about the structure, the merging of multiple individuals for the purpose of creating a shared formulation that can be either intention or attention, that allows exactly what David was describing, the invocation of something additional. So it's a formulation, not just mental. It is a formulation of quest. It is a formulation of path. It is a formulation of discovery, of exploration. But it is something you can actually get the tangibleness to if you sink into it. And that's how David was describing it. It's acknowledgement. It's agreement. And it's also very much, I think, a part of a statement of confidence. I am here. I am in this place. I do exist at this moment,
you know,
for this purpose.
You know, it's a funny thing, because the intellectual linear mind says, yeah, I understand that. Sure. And it just kind of like passes it off. But I say that there's a ritualistic purpose for, in a sense, in your heart saying, I am here now. Okay? And when you say, I am here now, and I am part of this group effort to do something, then something different can occur, because there's a larger body available. When a larger body is available, more can come down. And then when you are in that space, then you can access stuff that you couldn't access before. So that's why we do what we do. And that's why I point to it. And I know I do that often, because I think it's an important habit to get into, particularly when we're with the friends, we're with a big F, you know. Because friendship is an important part of an important line of work. And we come together in friendship. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I had you read that part, Pat, because this idea of the rarity of the company of the Brotherhood of Spiritual Souls. And I've read this before, and you know, this is just part of my history, which is sometimes vaguely important to me, but not that often sometimes. That's just not that. I wanted to read something, and stuff.
It might be there, but not visible at the moment.
I can't access it at the moment. But it's a card that I put together in when I was... Thank you, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
We had a work-study group when I was in L.A. many, many, many years ago. And we called our little group, the Philosopher's Stone, a work-study group. The Philosopher's Stone. And so we had these little cards made up. And the header on the card says, "For those who are searching for truth and self-realization, the need for co-workers is as great as the need for teachers."
Oh.
How do you like that?
Oh, I like it.
I do too. So we hit that one out of the park. So we are co-workers, and to the extent that you, and this is very important, the extent that you access that opportunity is the extent to which you imbue yourself with the golden nature of friendship together. It's moments that when you do that together, there's a deposit made in the essence bank, okay? So when you come to friends, you come and you go, "Oh, geez, let's get this done real quick." Or you come to your friends of this nature, of this caliber, and you say, "Now we're together. Now what shall we do?" So anyway, I'm just jazzed by the whole idea of our ability to come together in this way. And I've been jazzed for the last 25 years, and I think it's just getting better. So where are we now? 40th chamber, and you're going to mark down how many people are viewing and things like that, right? So 40th chamber, Pat.
So when we look at the context of these chambers,
yes.
And in this particular version, it's not
good.
As easy to see as it is in some of the other
good.
Versions
important
of this
point.
Of this book, but there are these themes
yeah.
that keep reoccurring, and the easiest ones for me to recall have to do with numbers, but that's my bookkeeper thing. I love numbers, and I love seeing how they occur and what they signify. So when we're at the 40th chamber, it does mean that there hasn't been necessarily 40 days. It means that there have been 40 apparent locations. And that's important to remember because these readings go through the 49th chamber. And in some of the versions, it actually uses the word day, the 49th day.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about is actually more like a configuration. We call it a chamber. We reference it as a reading, but it refers to actually a configuration as such, which is your relationship to the unfolding, however you experience that. That's what this description is. And another way you can think of this, it's an address. It's if you're thinking of this journey as the dissolving of everything that there is that you know about, and then the reconfiguring of everything that there is that you know about, that journey has various locations, the address. And when you deliver an instruction, it's like you're sending a letter. You're delivering an instruction to an address. So when I see the words here, the 40th chamber, I go, now what is there in the 40th chamber that wasn't in the 39th, hasn't been there before? Why is there a 40th chamber. Because we're getting pretty far along here. We've been getting certain messages. And that is the very first sentence.
I don't want you to...
I'm not going to do it.
I don't want you to start that.
I'm not going
to
do it.
I want to underline what Pat has said, because it's Pat's answering a question that I posed to her 2 weeks ago when Simon Templar said, how could I read for my mom who died 10 years ago? And coincidentally, two other people had asked me the same question within a week. And how can I read for my dead mom?
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't read for her when she died, and now what can I do? Because I didn't even know this existed, maybe. So Pat has answered the question. These are deliveries of data points on a map. These are addresses. If you think of them in a linear way, it's too confusing. You can't make a sense of it. But if you suspend the linearity of it and you begin to think in terms of it as an address and descriptions of places on a map, then it starts to make sense why your dead mom can be read to 10 years later. Because maybe that's when she gets ready.
Well, the other part of that that is so intriguing to me,
yeah,
that I pondered for a really long time when I first read this material, which is 40 years ago now, was that if that being is experiencing that chamber, it has nothing to do with time because it's outside of an existence. It's not in existence. It's the what is left after that has all gone away.
Mm-hmm.
That is your reflection of what is left when it all goes away and your experience of that reflected back to you. That's what a chamber is. So if that is the experience of the being, that being's experience of that is always that. So when you direct the delivery of the instructions to that, it's always available when the being experiences that. It goes there.
It goes there. This is actually what I'm about to say is not a non sequitur, okay?
That's okay.
I'm going to say
yeah.
It and maybe we'll get it or not. So I was reading this stuff about Brahma. And how did it come to be that Brahma is everything and all of this sort of thing? And in one of the ancient stories, and I'm just really not good about names, this particular high god was talking to this other high god and telling him his son how to visualize it. And he took a glass of pure water, and into it he dropped a cube of salt. And the next morning when they came back, the water was still very clear. But when they tasted the water, it was salty. So it's like the Brahma had just, the being is extended in everything. We may not know it, but it is the source of all. And it is the extension of that that we then become. Now, we have to go back and grab that. And that's why we're doing the work we're doing now. We're reinitiating ourselves into our home base, okay? And we are working our way through these chambers to remember what to do. And that's why I think the 40th chamber knocked my socks off, because it's so bang on for that.
Yeah.
So why don't we start working our way through four? We're not going to read the whole thing, but we're going to introduce it and then bring up some concepts within that 40th chamber. Do you want to get us started, Pat?
I'd like to get us started. Chamber. Even though I've been shown all these instructions so far on how to liberate myself, I haven't yet understood. And so now the womb door hasn't been closed, and I am definitely about to take rebirth.
Yeah, go ahead.
Times of birth are about to occur. I'll remember that each dimension is color-coded. So I should be aware of the color as well as the form. I'll pay attention to details. I'll be able to gather all the information I need in order to choose properly. Details are more important than the process.
Then let's just read the next two paragraphs. And do you want to read? Maybe you two could read.
Ready? Yes. I'll see a lake with white birds on it. I won't go there. It's a place where the teaching hasn't taken root, so I should avoid it.
I'll see a huge white mansion of very high aesthetic design. If I can enter there, I should do it.
So what's going on here? The Voyager, there's no question now. The Voyager understands, okay, rebirth is happening. I'm not going to be in this full liberation, whatever the heck that means. And I know rebirth is going to happen. How do I now discern? What do I do? I look at that first one, the lake of white birds. That's pretty cool to me. I like white birds.
Sounds like a summer vacation.
It sounds beautiful. I mean, it's white birds.
It's a lake.
Isn't that a good sign? And a lake, isn't that a good sign? How am I going to tell what is a good sign? How am I going to know?
What's that?
Sounds like Florida, okay.
And then the next one is this giant mansion.
Aesthetic design.
High aesthetic design.
If I can.
It's a white mansion.
I should do it if I can. I should.
I don't know that I wind up to get seeing these white mansion things. So how do we begin to understand? Is the author telling us that it's going to look exactly like this? Is this how you do it?
Or something with the same signature.
The same signature.
What do you mean when you use the word signature? What's the difference between a signature and a sign? What's the sign? What's the signature? How do you mean the difference?
But the author says before that, Harry, the details are more important than the gross form.
Exactly.
He has the answer.
One of them has art added to nature.
Okay.
And the other one does not. The first
has art added to nature, okay.
It has design.
Has design, okay.
One is a low place, and the other is a high place.
Okay.
You mean the lake is low and the
yes.
mansion is high?
Well, that's actually the first thing that I thought of, is that the mansion suggests a higher dimension, or suggests the crown dimension.
Something that...
Even though, see, white, it's odd because it said to pay attention to the colors. Well, both of those things are white. There's white where the teaching is not taken hold, and there's white with this great mansion, which is up on a height.
You know, and for me, the water is a indication of something that is unsettled and fluid and quite different from the terrain. So finding a house on a hill sounds like it's a much more stable place for the teaching than a lake, which
yes.
the teaching might sink in.
The author, he writes this sentence and he says, oh, the teaching hasn't taken root here. What do you mean? How does he know this? So we're lucky, first of all, because we're not, some of us aren't dead yet, and we're just in the process of, we have the ability to still work to develop something that might give us a clue to this thing.
Well, I think it's quite a strong indicator that I don't think I'm mistaken about this. This is the first time that the instructions note, even though I've been shown. So it's the first time there's a visual that is referred to. I've been shown all these instructions, and all of these references of the various, we could call them options for rebirth, they all use the language, I see, I'll see.
Yeah.
Except for hearing songs, okay, which is... A little bit, but it seems to me that there's a level of perception that is an added level of perception with the thing of sight. I'll see this, and I've been shown these instructions, which in a certain way, if you think, this is my personal take on this, this is not anything that I've got any material to add for it. I can't reference anything, but when you sit in meditation, or when you sit in stillness, or when you sit in the calm, quiet places, the senses that I usually have available to me that I have access to exercise, they're not very close to sight. They're more like sensing, feeling, even hearing a little bit. The sight thing, that's like a level of clarity. That's like a level of understanding. That's like a level of being able to grasp it, to take it on.
Yeah, but I mean, think of because of that, because of the sensual nature of it.
Yeah.
Imagine yourself walking through this valley and you come upon a lake with white birds. I mean, you know, that has a lot of impact on me. That would have a great deal of impact. And I go, yeah, that looks pretty cool. And then there's this cold white mansion on the hill, and, oh, man, I don't know if I want to go there. I like the birds. So how then would I even know that, and the teaching hasn't taken root? Here's an answer.
Well, maybe more of a question. Isn't the Voyager still getting the instructions? So when you're seeing, aren't you still hearing the instructions? You're looking at the scene, and it's like the GPS system in a car. You know, you're driving along, and the GPS is saying, oh, turn left at such and such, and turn right.
Yeah, but what if your cultural situation is such that You don't have white mansions or lakes with white birds. You're still a voyager.
Yeah, and isn't there the GPS happening? Aren't you hearing?
We're giving the GPS. The key element in those things is, in that phraseology, is the teaching hasn't taken root yet. It hasn't taken. How would you know whether the teaching has taken root?
DePaul says, has the teaching taken hold here or not, question alive, might not have occurred to us, but now we have visual reminders of it to take with us.
We know whether the teaching has taken root because we are practicing the teaching at all times. In the 39th chamber, it talks about the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And what was the phrase about the teaching again?
I take refuge in the way of the teaching.
What do we mean? How do I know where the teaching is? Ah, so we begin to develop a sensing, is what Ivan is telling us. We develop a sensing. The teaching's here and it is not here. Let me ask you a question. Tomorrow you're going to go out and do all kinds of stuff. Some people I know are going to go to the store in the morning, I heard. And other people are going to go to the vet maybe. And other people are going to go do their jobs. Can you sense when you're doing that when there's more teaching and less teaching? Are you able to do that?
If you practice.
Yes. Tell me more about that, Harry.
Well, again, I guess I'm referencing something that's tautological, talking about the signature, the sensory signature of it. I mean, there'll be other signs available. People will be moving in a different way. They'll be more mindful in their actions. Somehow we can tell that.
Somehow you can tell it. And I think Ivan gave us the answer. It has to do with the discernment that you get through sensing. And Silverdale, you have a particular practice that you do. And then I know that during the day, part of the practice is you literally go out. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I call it circulation, but after spending some period of time investigating my inner world, I think it's important to go out and get outer impressions as well. So that's a part of my routine.
You get outer impressions, and the sensing mechanism is alive, and you're aware of more or less, in a sense. Well, you might see a little beacon of the teaching somewhere. Suddenly you might see somebody that's unusually alive.
Well,
that's a
good point. During my periods of repose in the morning, I'm trying to develop this inner vibratory sensation really for two purposes. One is to see if I can maintain it in the midst of the world around me through, you know, just
let's underline stimulation. Let's underline that point. Can I maintain that sensitivity while I'm out in the world? So there's a contrast. Go ahead.
And can I sense that same essential self in the people that I observe? So, you know, it's a kind of a twofold effort. And listen, it's not easy to do, but it is possible.
So don't you think you would then find times when you could see, oh, the teaching has taken place here, has taken root here, and the teaching has not taken root here.
And the way I might pose that to myself is the contrast between consciousness and unconsciousness. So what I was attempting to say earlier is if you see a building, that seems to indicate some degree of consciousness in its construction. So if you're looking at a person, you might say, to what degree is that person conscious? So they might actually be a follower of the teaching, a teaching similar to ours. But if you're looking at a lake, it connotes to me the unconsciousness of ordinary life. People are, even the birds themselves flying up in the air without being rooted into the earth itself is a reflection of that state of unconsciousness.
Well, one of the things I noticed in these options, as they are described in this manner, anything that is, quote, a form of nature does not include an aspect of the teaching.
Interesting.
It may be the peaceful cattle, where you could have a good life, or it could be a lake with horses, a lake with cattle, glades, holes, caves, etc. But any description of a place that has as its basic component nature is not described as a place where the teaching has taken hold. The only two places where it's mentioned to opt for to go, if you can, is the huge white mansion and the soft white temples and highly formalized buildings. Nothing else is described as a place that you want to go to. So as a formulation, as a visual formulation, it seems to say the impact of the teaching causes a change in the landscape, a construct in the landscape that is not of nature.
That's exactly right. And those structures required specific effort to create them.
Right, because there's abandoned railroad cars and barns and shacks and huts, but those are not described as constructs that you would wish to go to. You want to be repelled from them.
David, may I add something? I mentioned earlier that you have art added to nature in these things, but you can also have art added to nature in different ways. And just a week ago, I went at our family's ranch down to the river, and somebody had come through on a canoe and in this beautiful natural setting had built little cairns with rocks balanced on one another in different places. And this was all made out of natural material, but it added a quality to that place such that I knew someone with kindness and thought had been there.
And effort.
The teaching effort, was there.
The effort of attention, quality, significance had been put into it.
Exactly.
So we can look for signs. So as you go through your day, look for these signs.
The other thing I'm thinking is, having grown up in a Christian churches, there was always the expression about the heavenly mansions, and so it seems okay. So think of the people who may not have had training in this particular form of the teaching, and yet there's going to be a recognition factor for them, or the Buddhist temples. So somehow there's even in the most removed way, there's still a type of aspect of the teaching happening.
So it's time to start developing a discernment of characteristics, in a sense. And so I refer you now not only to the conversation in this particular chamber, but to Appendix A, B, and C.
There you go, yeah.
Okay, and in A, B, and C, you're going to see a lot of data. And then I've ripped off a copy of the Bardo stations. Can you see that? You can see it.
Can you zoom in a little on the...
Can I get it closer, David?
Can they see it online is my question.
Okay.
To the other camera. No,
this one over
this
here.
One over
that's
here.
The broadcast.
Coming, just a minute.
Well, you can probably go away. Cause
there you go. That was good.
Bardo Stations.
Bardo Stations.
So I strongly urge you, if you don't have a copy of this, to get a copy from Ivan and start working your way through it. You start reading this thing and you're going to go, wow, this is pretty weird. Well, it is weird. Okay. But that's where we are, too. So.
No, it's a tour. It's a tour of the archetype. I mean, I've been so impressed over the years, you know, at all of it. You know, you talk about the details rather than the gross forms. I mean, for EJ to create that set of photographs, boy, I mean, he spent years literally collecting those HO scale train layouts. I mean, I'm talking about what would you call them? Like elements, you know, all of those trees and hills and houses, buildings.
The bits and pieces of the universe.
Yeah, the warehouse district and the wharf district, and he made a layout that was extremely complex. Yeah, right. And second,
yes.
Yeah, the second life is very. Yeah, it's very. It's a rendering of the archetype. Realm of archetypes.
Yeah,
I'd like
yeah.
to go back to what Tamara said about
yeah.
readings, about you know the fact that
yeah.
as a reader delivering the instructions to the Voyager, I'm reminding the Voyager, bringing the Voyager's attention to the fact, I mean to the event, the actual event of being in the archetype, in that chamber, you know, the womb door is open. Whatever, it's the 40th chamber now, whatever chamber it is, it's not Starbucks. You know, it's like, this is not, we're a long way from Kansas start. It is, it's in the archetype. And so you're, okay, this is a reminder, yeah, it's that, you know, that's not just some rich person who you might be mad, angry when you look at that mansion and say, I could never have a mansion like that, or whatever. That's not the mansion you're looking at. It's a mansion in the 40th chamber.
Right.
When the womb door is open, you're looking through a different lens.
You're looking through a different lens.
Yeah.
But we can develop the discernment. That's my point. And if you read through the rest of the chamber 40, you're going to see all these other indications. And then he spends quite a bit of time on the last part there about what happens when you go, you know, it's very moving when he says, if I hear songs being sung about battle, well, that should be a sign, okay? Let's just say, when you hear that, you go, okay, and then you slide away from that space. But the key for you is to hear, when can you hear the songs of battle?
Mm-hmm.
If you're identified with your argument, with your arch rival, guess what? You're not able to discern that because you are generating the song.
That's the biggest part about this. If you are standing in the reactive mode to what you are seeing or hearing or think you're experiencing, you are not going to have the opportunity to be discerning about it, because discernment takes at least an inch of objectivity. You have to allow some of the significance to drop away before you can allow yourself to make an assessment with your sensing of where it appears that you are, which you cannot do if you're involved in it.
Well, like I was telling you about the time I was driving along, and the guy behind me honked his horn because I wasn't reacting fast enough to go through the intersection, thought I should have gone. My reaction at that point, I raised my hands in anger. I went, "What do you mean?" Like this, right? At that moment, I was ready to get out of the car and fight the guy. That's how much anger came up at that moment in me. So, was I able to objectively...
And the question is, how does it seem to you now?
Well, so today it's a little bit different than that.
A little different.
But at that moment, I'm just telling you, that is part of this part, this thing.
Exactly.
That moves through this wind. And because of that, I just need to be aware that that's going to occur from time to time. Because if I go there, I will be enslaved and made to work at the destruction of the land and subjection of the inhabitants. There are tortures and inquisitions, war, treachery, machinery, engines. Even if I die, they have ways to revive me to force me to keep working. Oh. Politicians at work.
Well, the statement of, let us call it the statement of stability, because it offers a way to regain balance, is the hell dimension is so full of pain and horror that I might never regain my stability and equilibrium long enough to get out of it. So to me, that implies that you do have stability and equilibrium, and that it is something that you can regain. Therefore, you have a tiny little, I don't remember what you call that, but you know when you put something in a fulcrum and you start, you know, wiggling it back and forth and back and forth until you've made a little bit of a space and you wedge something in there, like you're talking about with the anger and the...
Yeah.
That is what this sentence says to me. In the hell dimension, you might not regain. So the fact that you can regain your equilibrium and stability is the thing to allow you to increase your perception, your discernment, and above all, your objectivity.
But then he goes on to say,
yep,
at the end of that, I won't fall asleep.
There you go.
I'll keep awake and resist with all my effort until the womb entrance to hell is closed. So where do we practice this?
I guess in the moment that we have ourself awake.
Is this clear to everybody? I mean, we are given the golden pathway here right now, today, on what we can do tomorrow. I'm not going to fall asleep. I'm going to stay awake because I don't want to be drugged down into the hell dimension, because unfortunately you will be. And we know we have in the lifetimes of the past. And that, because when we read these words and we talk about so full of pain, I may never be again to gain stability, there's a little part of us that says, oh yeah, that is right. How do we know that's right? Well, we did some time there. So it's time to cycle into a different mannerism so that we're not there, that we are somewhere else. And the practice happens later on. It happens right now, happens at 8 o'clock when this class is over, happens at 8:05, happens tomorrow morning at 7:30, all day long. That's when the practice occurs. You go into an important meeting, you practice the sense of objectivity. Yes, you're in the meeting, you're doing the meeting, but you're also watching what's going on in this particular meeting. You're a player in it, but you just also watch. You practice the development of your sense of crystal objectivity. That's how you practice.
There's a clue also in the wording that says, my fervent and powerful intention to stay away from the hell dimension. My understanding of the word powerful intention and fervent intention requires that I know exactly and specifically, as it says, the detail. What is the hell dimension for me in this moment? Where is that? Because it says, I'll think of revulsion to it and resist it. It's not something that's only in chamber 40.
It's
everywhere. So my knowledge of the hell dimension is required in order for me to maintain a powerful and fervent intention to stay away from it. You need to know, what is that?
You need to carry two vials in your pocket. One is the vial of repulsion to that, mm-hmm. which is a form of knowledge. The other one is the vial of knowing what the alabaster castle is like, too.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that that truly is your home, and you have work to do, and you need to be there. Yes, we do. We're pulled into it because we are human in nature. We have limitations. We battle for survival. And yet, we don't have to be of that. We are in the world. We are not of it. Practice that. Practice it, practice, practice. We can do it all the time.
Can you ask any questions, Tickles?
Simon Templis.
Excuse me, Dan, you go right ahead. That's what I was going
to say. Well, I just wanted to say Simon has said, finally was true, the old adage, don't do this or you will go to hell.
It is true. Spot on. Exactly right. And the creepy thing about it is that it's going to take, sometimes it's going to take a form that on its surface doesn't appear like the hell dimension.
If you see a road paved with good intentions, don't go there.
It's not enough. It's not enough. You have to actually do it. It seems that build, and I go back to this idea of actually building mm-hmm. these structures, takes effort. It takes intention, and it takes doing. You got to do it during the day. So take these glasses and put them on as you go through your day tomorrow, and you just go, wow, what's going on here? Really look at it from this point of view. Get a copy of the Bardo Stations, read through Appendix A, B, and C. That'll help a bit. And what else?
And
So usually what I would do, like in the practical work on self-class, what we do is, okay, so your exercise is this. And so the exercise is this, when you go through the, can you discern between a place where the teaching has taken root and a place where the teaching has not taken root? As you go through the day, tomorrow, tonight, the rest of the week, can you see and develop a discernment? And we're going to ask you that next week, because we need the answer to that before we go into Chamber 41. Simple as that. So I'm hoping someone's going to bring the answer. I think Simon's not even going to be here. He's on his way to he's on his winter holidays starting soon.
One thing that I wonder about in that condition, you're not in any position to analyze the situation. So there must be something that would clue the Voyager into what that place is.
Well, let me ask you this, Dan. Do you think it's possible to have that discernment for you?
I don't know.
You know, when I did that, I did a 10-day isolation in West Virginia, of all places, with this guy named Richard Rose. And I came out, and it was incredible, wonderful. And I came out, and I had this long talk with him, and I go, the biggest thing I don't understand, I says, I don't know if I'm on the path and when I'm not on the path. And he goes, as long as that's a real question for you, you're on the path. As long as you keep that alive, the key is not to let it die. If it's burning, you know, these Zen guys, these Roshis over there in Japan, they'd, I've told this before, but they'd give you a koan. This is a koan, right? And as I've said before, that the Roshi, every morning at 6 a.m., you have to give the answer to the koan. So you line up outside the door, and, you know, he rings his little bell, and you come in, and he goes, okay, what's the answer? And, you know, and some people, as they walk through the door, they're so unprepared, he just rings the bell and goes, get out. So it's his, in a situation like that, Roshi forces you to keep that alive. Can we do that with each other? I mean, it would be tickle me pink if people asked that question of each other during the next week or so. What have you discerned? This is even Dean. I mean, this guy's a little bit off his rocker, I think. You can't figure that out. I say you can. And I know that over the years, I have developed more and more of that discernment. I know that some of my colleagues have developed that discernment. And they walk into a room and they go, I'm in the wrong place here. I went to this particular individual. I was in Southern California, and we had gone to this basically showing off her neighborhood, went to this particular restaurant. We walked in, and I go, this is the wrong place. This is the wrong place. And I didn't know why. It was pretty early in the morning. There wasn't hardly anybody there. And then people started arriving, and this was a restaurant that allowed you to have your dog. It was an outside area. You could bring your dog with you. Now, I think that's really cute, but it wasn't a place that I could be at. But I knew it when I sat down. That's the point. We can know that stuff, but you have to practice it. Go ahead.
Well, I heard it said before that the goal is to develop what they call the crest jewel, which is discrimination. But I never really, it always made sense to me, but I never related it to this in particular. Simon Templar has said, "Let aside that we must be awake, but the landscape is as precisely described by EJ. It seems like a precise address. I am correct?" Literally, those are the landscapes. Like, I live in the blue house with the garden, not in the green one.
I don't know the answer to that.
I know a way that you can discover something about that. And it's a practice that EJ has instructed us all in and continues to demonstrate it all the time. And it's called You Can Paint. And what you do is get yourself a palette and have a canvas and a brush and find out. Because paint is a visual thing, but it's not. It's an attitude. And when you're dealing with attitude, the only way that you can discover what your attitude is about something is to put it next to something else. Comparison.
So just keep doing it.
So just,
keep doing
it. Keep doing it.
Keep the koan alive, as in some of the Roshis talk about the koan. It has to sit in your stomach like a molten ball of iron to bother you that much. I guarantee you, if you keep it alive in that way, you will get results. There's no question about it. We're over time, but I want to spend another few minutes. Do you have another few minutes? You're okay?
Yep.
You can push that appointment then.
Yeah.
Later appointments, yeah. I haven't always had it. And so we have, we're getting to the end of the American Book of the Dead. I mean, we have about 5 or 6, 7, 8, 9 more weeks. I don't know how many more, but a few more weeks. And at some point, we have to consider, well, what are we going to do next, if anything? First, I mean, you know, like, do people want to keep doing stuff? I do. So we'll probably do stuff. And the question is what to do and what book to read. And I was, several people have mentioned this particular book here, the American Book of the Dead Guidebook. Now, the guidebook, other than the fact that it has this remarkable cover, I really love the cover, and it's old.
That's what you mean?
Well, I don't know. It just said 1970-something.
Yeah.
And 75.
One version of the text that was created around.
Yes. The 17th Book of the Dead, called the Book of Kafid Ur-Rafi.
Oh, thank you.
So there are 24 of these particular books. Okay, they're not called chambers. And then following that are all these sermons. So anyway, it's just a thought. I mean, I certainly don't feel qualified to lead the discussion on this particular book, but...
I don't understand why not.
Then again, I didn't feel qualified to do the ABD, and I still don't. So there.
And we don't want to mention that this is one of my favorite forms.
You have an interest in this?
Well,
you might show up?
It is, in my opinion, the easiest accessible form when you read the sermons that there is to all of EJ's teachings. That's all I have to say. Do we want a tiny little sample?
So are you saying that you might come
back?
Well,
I believe that if we were talking about doing a little bit of reading, and it started with the 8th Sunday sermon, this is going to be a very short sermon. And the reason I'm going to make it so short is so that you will remember what I'm going to say today. You, as a spiritual being, not only have the power to believe something about yourself or about your environment, if any, but you also have the power to make it true for yourself. So true that you can experience it and feel it. You have the power to give something you believe in enough reality that it has power over you. So if you believe that you are a material man or woman and that you live in a material world in which you are born, live, suffer illness, and die, then that's what you are. And if you believe that you are a spirit, why then that's what you are. It's as simple as that. Unfortunately, you may have given your beliefs so much power that they won't just go away because you want them to. This is what you are here to do. That is what we are working out together, and it has been done, so you can do it too.
So we might take a shot at this, and if it's something that you don't have a copy of, now, that's another book you should order from Ivan.
Ivan is Gateways.
So, read, get a copy of this.
Yeah.
Start slugging your way through it. We'll figure out how to approach it because there's the books and then there's the sermons and then all this stuff. Well, the very first part of it is to call the map.
There is the map.
That's part of what got me to it is because it became... so evident that the reading we're doing is the map. The ABD is a map. We're entering into that now. It's becoming more and more part of our life. And it's certainly part of my life. You know, when I drive down the highway, I go to a meeting now, this is what I'm thinking about. You know, it's always staring, oh my God. Can you recognize these things? Can you recognize the space where the teaching has taken root? There you
That's
have it.
That's lovely. It's a very nice place to...
Yes, it is.
...end for the 40th chamber.
How are we doing over there, Dan?
Well, Simon Templar says, interesting, Pat. Thanks for the tip. That was about the You Can Paint. Excuse me. You know, Paul says, yes, this is good, good, good. Perfect follow-up text.
Both?
And then... we have to tell Susan T. about this. And Lorna Allen is asking for the book title.
The American Book of the Dead Guidebook, which is in paperback. It is also in a limited edition, vellobound formulation, but I think the guidebook in paperback is easier. It is the only text that is out that is published that has the Sunday sermons in them. It's the only place they appear in public. And I think we haven't published the map for many years either, have we?
Right.
Only in this book.
So, yes, the American Book of the Dead guidebook.
Okay. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you all for being here.
We'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock again. Good night.
Yay, good night.
Good night, Harry.
Good night, good night.
Good night, everyone and all.
Take care.